April is National Poetry Month, and Public Radio 90 observes the occasion by presenting readings by poets from the Northern Michigan University and surrounding communities. Musician and poet Claudia Drozin is a native of Brooklyn, New York, who now lives with her family in Marquette, Michigan. Claudia is principal flutist in the Marquette Symphony Orchestra and an adjunct faculty member in the Music Department of Northern Michigan University. She has an MA in Creative Writing from Northern Michigan University, where she was a preliminary poetry reader for Passages North, and a BFA in Flute Performance from the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Her poetry has appeared in the Poetry Society of Michigan's Peninsula Poets, Lit Up, the Driftwood Review, Lips, Water Music, the Great Lakes State Poetry Anthology, Jewish Currents, and Maiden Voyage.
What a Dove Does. As dawn crowns, the soft, modal chant of a mourning dove fills dead air. At first phrase, his oral lament strictly calibrates to new sun, exiting moon trinomes. But in the blink of an avian eye, he relaxes his coo, and, using musical license as his guide, makes a retard at the end of each repetition. The same each time, breaking your heart each time. The silent language of a working marriage. In the sun-striped living room, he sheds his shirt. Not for sex, for utility. After Saturday errands at Target, Q-tips, kitty litter, a birthday card in the shape of a clown that shouts, "You're four!" A shower curtain with bubbles on it, flashlight batteries. They arrive back at the house, close their car doors in almost unison, get looks, licks from the bored cat, the jazzed-up dog, and settle in to regroup before lunch. In the sweet quiet, they can hear the dog climb back onto the couch, twirl three times, put her air brakes on, and park. Oh, sorry, I left her husband bare-chested. He siphons 40 gallons of old water out of the aquarium, squeaks off the algae from the glass. He carries green bucket after green bucket, sorcerer's apprentice style, to the bathtub, building a new waterbed for the fish. Jockeying back and forth down the narrow hall, they cross paths, his wife toting a laundry bin of folded towels. They step aside, awkwardly, almost breaking out into laughter as if to say, "No, you go. No, please, I'll wait. You." He tires, kicks the bucket with one knee, water surging onto the carpet. He shakes his head as he silently swears to himself. She goes to the nearby dining room table to sort through snail mail, decides if there's anything besides bills that need to be kept. Nothing. Zipping open credit card offers, wearing 0% interest till the end of time ads on their envelopes, coupons for sugar-laden drinks, flyers from starched-shirted, backward-thinking local politicians, she grimaces at all the wasted paper. They don't talk out loud. They figure they'll do that at lunch. But they are talking. The air vibrates with a comfortable tacit dialogue that fills the house like humidity fills the throne room. After the fish are free to explore their see-through digs, he hangs the newer shower curtain without her prodding. She hears him unhook the old, install the new, both cascading over the tub like vinyl waterfalls. There is little left to discuss at lunch. Instead, they smack lips, crack smiles. Maybe Jim Morrison was right. I park on a no parking this side of Street. It's bad, I know, but I promise myself I'll repark later. I'm just here to visit for, say, an hour and three quarters. This is where the book club was supposed to be, but perhaps I've got the wrong house. It is a greenhouse. That's what I typed into my phone. That's what Mary's husband's boss said. "Please come," he said. "No, no, don't bring anything." I walk up three brick steps, one missing a bit of mortar. Nobody I see from out here as I watch the darkening sky sneak by is expecting me. Nobody is milling around. Instead, a lit window filled with backs of heads, unknown faces, having an intimate relationship with a screen bigger than the Last Supper, the words on the front not Da Vinci, but Samsung, is what I see. Primary colored outfits on talking heads with vanilla expressions. This would be normal if I were inside, if it were my family staring from the couch at news, Netflix, whatever's on, but this is not normal. It's strange. Strange is a word that feels strange as soon as it passes my lips, but I am clearly an alien obstructing the freedom of these media consumers, these dwellers in their rightful house, my wrongful destination? People are strange when you're a stranger, I was told by a stoned hairy man of song, a world-famous Door in 1967. It's just that it's strange to believe anything of the kind because we, who know what our souls cry out for, are regular, understood, maybe loved. How can I be strange? It's just a silly construct. But I do indeed feel strange. Strange as an immigrant scaling a Mexican-American wall with President Cheeto looking on, Big Mac in hand. I reverse my steps and leave, squinting to make out the address over the garage. I'll check that when I get to my phone. I reflect on the previous boldness of my almost entrance. If I had known I were a stranger to those people, I might have approached them gingerly, as I would a supposedly seedless fruit whose segments I would roll around in my mouth, worriedly expecting they might house bitter pits. I decide the only place to go is home, so I walk with quick strides to my car, which I see now has been towed away. After the sermon. So at 10 minutes past, in the chilly church basement on potluck Sunday, gray meatloaf, grayer potatoes, three bean salad, Pastor Whitman's unattached family friend and bookkeeper, taller than is comfortable for a woman, Marjorie, who has been conspicuously absent from services since who knows when, storms into the smooth-floored Methodist mess hall, fiddles uneasily with her tortoiseshell head comb, the one etched with a red-throated loon that her niece really likes, throws herself to her knees, tries to hold back full-bodied sobs. Just about all munching and mumbling, pleasantries screech to a halt, as Marjorie admits to the congregated that hell is where she belongs, for she has been loving Pastor Whitman in a man-inside-woman sort of way for the last 18 months. And even as she confesses, she daydreams his jittery hands fumbling inside her blouse and places southward. Marjorie rubs her mascara-ringed eyes, brings news that she is carrying his fetal parishioner, that she wants to come clean. Most park their forks on the long tables and gasp. Pastor W. almost chokes on his snickerdoodle as his eyes avoid his wife's face, probably white as a Minnesota winter by now. But Mrs. Morgan, who works at Joanne Fabrics, and her friend Betty Haynes from Thursday Night Knitting Circle, continue to sip their coffee. These two obedient pew-fillers of the flock have known since they laid narrow-slitted eyes on Marjorie 2 years ago that she was a homewrecker, that their innocent pastor, not capable of instigating wrongdoing, would fall prey to her wiles, oh yes. But they still brim with faith that their Lord is benevolent, fair, will open up his forgiving heart to this duet of sinners, and somehow understand that humans work in mysterious ways.
These National Poetry Month readings are a Public Radio 90 production, recorded and produced in the facilities of WNMU-FM at Northern Michigan University. I'm producer and host Kurt Hosworth. Thanks for listening.